Welcome, everyone. This is The LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, July 12, 2008. My name is Marcia Mary Baker, and I will host the show today for the discussion on the topic, Defeating Your Enemy, George Soros. Now, this phrase, Your Enemy, George Soros, is the title of a dynamite pamphlet now in mass circulation, I think 200,000 copies in hard copy, but posted on the LaRouche Political Action Committee, where it was released in June, just last month. It's 24 pages and having a very vital, important impact. And I'm very glad in the studio today to discuss this are three people of the team who wrote it, who researched it, who are doing ongoing work. And so we welcome from the LaRouche Youth Movement, Leandra Bernstein. Welcome.
Ah, thank you.
And Ed Hamler.
Thank you.
And respectively, they are part of the command center, I guess you could call it, of the LaRouche Political Action Committee and the LaRouche Youth Movement in the United States. Leandra with the editorial section of LPAC, and Ed with what's called the war room of our whole operations effort. And also with us, Tony Chaikin. Welcome.
Hi, Marcia.
And you, people know him for many reasons. He's with Executive Intelligence Review. He's our history editor. And again, back to the point of this Your Enemy, George Soros dossier. Speaking very generally, because our guests will speak specifically, this was put out to have an impact, to break open the minds and institutions and the whole situation, especially in the United States, worldwide, but in the United States, in Washington, where one way to describe things is all around us, you see by the hour the economic breakdown that's taking place due to the fact that the financial system has crashed. It's crashed about a year ago this month. LaRouche announced that, hey, look, it's gone, and we should do something about it. He had a webcast in Washington, D.C. in July 2007. But instead, we're having more of the same of what caused it in the first place. Speculation, for example. In Washington, D.C., we just saw 3 days of hearings that were really commissioned, that were overseen by the Minnesota Congressman Colin Peterson, who's chairman of the Agriculture Committee, and he had hearings on speculation on food and fuel in which nothing's done about it. This represents the role of the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi. Nothing's being done about this. So this is critical that this is broken up, this inaction and denial and really treason. And so that's what our guests are going to discuss today. And with that, I just want to, before turning it over, just point out that this month, again, 1 year after of this webcast I mentioned a year ago, Linda LaRouche will hold another international webcast centered out of Washington, D.C. So it's a week from Tuesday. That will be July 22nd. It will be at 1 o'clock Eastern Time. And be sure and get others to participate, and that will be telecast on the LPAC site, which is www.larouchepac.com, LaRouchePac.com, July 22nd at 1 o'clock. So without saying further about this, Ed, why don't you begin with why this pamphlet? Why this time? You discussed it with LaRouche. You all commissioned it. What's the story?
Well, we really began with a historic insight that Lyndon LaRouche had. Remember, July 25th of last year, he made a statement about where we were going in the economic system, and what he said was the economic system, had already blown out, and that we're moving. Or we had already moved into a hyperinflationary phase shift in the economy. And that's what we're looking at right now with the oil prices, with the food prices. But it's much more than that. We're currently now in the breakdown of the current economic system right now. And a lot of what he discussed in terms of historic insight was centered around the long-standing conflict between the United States and the British Empire, that under these kinds of conditions, the British Empire are going to go for world dictatorship, essentially. We saw an attempt to do that with the Lisbon Treaty in Europe, which we jammed up the works with that. Our movement did that with the Irish. And but the idea is, okay, well, the British have to make sure at this point that there's not a Franklin Roosevelt-style alternative in the United States, because that is the other alternative. It's the only thing that will work. Is a return to a fixed exchange rate monetary system, to go back to the lower 80%, a productive American system style economy. Now, what we're seeing with the current elections is an attempt to totally destroy that. And George Soros is one of the key operatives, British operatives, being employed for that purpose specifically. Sometimes, if you want to destabilize the British system, you have to go after their cronies. And George Soros is one of the major cronies in this operation to make sure that nothing like LaRouche's policies get in.
Right. Well, I guess we could continue this with either how his tentacles in the United States and internationally, or any other aspect of it. I'll throw it open to how you want to proceed.
Well, I think it's important to get an idea of who exactly this creature is, because in digging up some of his operations, you realize that this man makes dirt look clean. So, I mean, one of the aspects that we go through in this pamphlet is Soros's history with the Nazi Party. He was a young Jewish boy in Hungary. He was about 14 years old when the Nazis were occupying Hungary. And that's essentially where he got his first job. And so he was working with the Nazi Economic Department, and this is a department that was notorious for taking the hair of Jews, making mattresses, soap, from gruesome stuff. And these were Soros's first bosses. So there was an interview with him in 1998 on CBS where he was confronted with this. And most people, I mean, you'd think that there would be a little bit of psychological scarring. They'd feel some remorse for working with the Nazi Party. Yeah, but not George Soros. He actually used that experience as the basis for his later career, which we'll get into. But basically, he was asked, and you watch lots of people get shipped off to the death camps. He says, "Yes, I was 14 years old, and I would say that was when my character was made." And he was asked if he felt any remorse for what he had done. He said, "No, not at all." And he said, no feeling of guilt? He said, "No." He said, I could be on the other side of this. I could be the one who was having their goods taken away from him. He was taking from the houses of Jews who had been expelled. He says, "Well, actually, in a funny way, it's just like in the markets. If I weren't there, of course, I wasn't doing it," he says, "but somebody else would. They'd be taking it anyhow." And he says, whether I was there or not, I was only a spectator. The property was being taken away. So I had no role in taking away that property, so I had no sense of guilt." But he's saying, this is just like the markets. If I didn't crash the currency of Malaysia, somebody else would have. So just this deep immorality, which the way we initially put this out was with the question, is the Democratic Party taking gold fillings from George Soros? It's a fair question.
Right, and I think, Tony, you've made... put out recently from another biography, right? The association with the Eichmann Jewish Council. sign-ups that the family was involved in. Is that right?
Before he got in with the economic department, going around Hungary collecting the confiscating the property of the Jews that had been sent off to Auschwitz, he was enrolled in the what was called the Jewish Council in Hungary, which Adolf Eichmann, the mastermind of extermination, had set up in all the occupied countries to have the Jewish people or leaders from the Jewish community self-select into a group that would work for the Nazis and carry out their oppression of the Jews. And so young George Soros got the job of a courier for the Jewish Council, and his job was to go around to Jewish notables in the community, lawyers to begin with, and inform them that they had to report to be deported. And his father writes about this in his father's memoirs, saying, "I told George that he had to be sure to tell the people that what they were going to be reporting for was to be deported, so they would understand that." And he says later he told George to stop doing it. George says for his authorized biographer that he was very excited about this role. And it's from this experience in alternatively serving the Nazis and hiding in various ways as a with his father as a forger, as a black market operator. This is really before, during, and after the Nazi occupation. But with this core idea that you should survive at the expense of everybody else, with that idea, he went to England after World War II and was adopted into the British oligarchy by going to the London School of Economics and studying the ideas of radical free trade, immoralism of von Hayek and Karl Popper, and then came to the United States to work in the interests of this world vulture of the city of London.
So then if I don't know if you want to fast forward or bring more out, but then he's recently been on this book tour on television, but he himself covers these decades as he's been a mega speculator, a mega philanthropist, a mega this, mega that. But in fact, characterizing his operations, he's been one of these cronies, Ed used that term, for these British imperial subversion operations. So...
Yeah, I mean, much of what he's been doing since the late 90s, since the LTCM crisis, but more recently since the Bush administration, is buying up key sections of the Democratic Party under the guise of being a so-called philanthropist. And, I mean, remember, this guy has a concept called the open society, right, which in his words is the promotion of... democracies and countries. Now, what he's really talking about is the overthrow of sovereign governments. Is that the idea of sovereignty of nations is an oppressive concept. It does not respect the markets, which it should not. And so, therefore, we need an open society without these kinds of restraints. He openly promotes the French Revolution as an example of that kind of thing. And there's other things he promotes. Now, so once you get to how to think about what he's doing with the Democratic Party, remember, every operation that he's financed so far, take Howard Dean, for example, he'll give money to efforts that make the Democratic Party a losing party. Now, this is very dangerous once you start talking about where this is situated. We almost lost... we had the opportunity of losing the 2006 midterm elections through this process because Howard Dean was intent on doing it. Now, and despite Howard Dean, the population came through and the younger 18 to 35 generation was a sort of unexpected factor in that election. So we actually So Howard, despite Howard Dean, which is, you know, funded by Soros, we came through, and this was in large part due to the LaRouche Political Action Committee mobilization to do that as such. Right. Now, look at the other operation right now. He has a large part to play in the Obama campaign. Now, I mean, we can discuss this further. But remember, Obama's been one of the fastest. His career has grown very fast from being a state senator to running the president. Okay. And Soros has been one of the key people financing this operation through his buy-up of MoveOn, through buying up different kinds of so-called grassroots organizations like ACORN, Center for American Progress. Soros has become a sort of money conduit, like a fund. He has a sort of fund.
And directly choosing Obama and vetting him for other billionaires.
Yeah.
Before Obama announced for the presidency in 2006, he met with Soros. Soros interviewed him for an hour and said, okay, you're okay. I'm now going to introduce you to the other billionaires. And then a couple of weeks later, Obama announced, I'm running for president. I've been accepted.
It's some of these billionaires were the head of the American branch of the United Bank of Switzerland. So these are some pretty big people. And there were these meetings that went on personally with Soros and Obama in these groups. Right now, I mean, everybody should know by now that Obama has nothing to say about real policy. It shouldn't be a surprise to people. We've been watching this thing for some time. So you're going to run a guy. I mean, think about Soros, right? You're going to finance a guy. You're going to support a guy who has no policy on the fact that we're in a hyperinflationary breakdown crisis. He wants to change something. I don't know if he's talking about his underwear or what he wants to change, but we're in a crisis, and the lower 80% is looking for a solution from this guy. And he says nothing. So we're on the track right now, if we stick to this option, between Obama and McCain as the presumptive candidates, to be destroyed as a country. So this is the kind of operation that Soros is running.
Well, let me ask one thing, or you may certainly interrupt me, but you said about funding over the years, over 2006, years before that. I don't know when the Open Society kind of thing got started. I think, Leandra, you called it the Forced Open Society campaign of his worldwide, maybe from the 90s.
Yeah, he didn't think that his job in Hungary was done. So he went back in 85 and opened the first Open Society. And the thing to keep in mind with that operation, because it was a big player in the liberalization of the Russian economy after the Soviet Union had collapsed, and it's here that you really see the role that LaRouche plays as a forecaster. Because 1983, he puts forward the Strategic Defense Initiative. He warns the Soviet Union, you know, if you don't accept this proposal, then it's going to lead to the destruction of your economy. Now, more people are listening to LaRouche than sometimes our enemies want to admit, even though they're the ones who are listening to him. So 1983, LaRouche makes this forecast, and this historic turning point is right on the horizon. He says in about 5 years, the Soviet Union will collapse if they don't accept the proposal. And they don't. So sure enough, these groupings begin to move in to take control of policy in the wake of the collapse. And so, you know, there was a shock therapy in Poland where Soros brought in his Harvard professor Jeffrey Sachs to loot the economy of Poland. But in Russia, you see it especially. Soros was working through the Open Society, working through the IMF and World Bank to get them to adopt a policy of liberalization where basically they would sell off all the state-owned assets in order to make money. And when these proposals were coming out, and there were handfuls of them, LaRouche said, you know, the last thing you want to do is take down the physical economy in Russia, which is what you know, Soros was pushing. Sell it off. And so with this, I mean, the sell-off of the Soviet Union, of their productive economy, it created a huge huge criminalization of the population. You know, they're looting houses, taking silverware, and then shipping it out. The military industry, they were shipping tanks into China at you know, fire sale prices. And the nature of the society changed. It turned into a really open society where everyone was openly a criminal. Scientists, engineers, now they're you know, pimps, looters, and you know, this continued. There has been intervention under Putin to clean this operation up, but just with the criminalization of the economy and you know, the looting, drug trade was huge.
I remember when they sold Mark Rich and Company sold the aluminum off on the world markets. I mean, you remember these instances of everything being grabbed up and sold off internationally.
Hmm. Yeah, but the drug trade also, which Soros is notorious, I mean, in the United States, in South America, for his promotion of drug legalization. And the criminalization of the Russian economy led to a huge outbreak in dope trade. And so along these routes, you had the physical effects of the dope trade, which included you know, HIV, AIDS, drug-resistant strains of tuberculosis. So what does Soros do with his open society? He comes in and he says, well, I'm going to contribute money to create to help deal with the HIV problem, to help deal with the tuberculosis problem. And people look at that as a thing in and of itself, and they say, oh, this philanthropy gig is really doing a good job. It was his free market ideology that created the problem. I mean, and this is where Democrats especially are totally soft. They buy into this philanthropy line.
Yeah, it's the lace curtain Irish fascism, not Irish, lace curtain fascism, where the British control created the potato famine, and then they set up two or three soup kitchens somewhere. But recently, is this jumping around too much? But the current playing out of just what you said about Russia in the 90s is taking place in Africa with the George Soros networks moving to create misery and destabilize Zimbabwe and South Africa.
Yeah, to understand this, let's go back for a second to the 1960s when John Kennedy was president and the U.S. was resuming the Franklin Roosevelt outlook about uplifting the third world countries, the former colonial countries, and getting in with them to get heavy industrial progress, nuclear plants, dams, and real power for these societies. And at that time, George Soros was in New York City, working in conjunction with J.P. Morgan, running operations to get hot money out of the United States into London, to build up huge speculative activities in Europe. And John Kennedy, President Kennedy, And this will be 45 years ago next Friday, July 18th, 1963. President Kennedy slammed the door shut on this activity by passing, by getting the Congress to pass the interest equalization tax. And this was to put a tax on people pouring money overseas to buy bonds in Europe or something like that, which Soros was running these arbitrage games on. And there was the day that Kennedy made that announcement, there was a meeting in the of the officers of J.P. Morgan. And the head of that Morgan Bank said, this is Henry Alexander, "This is a day that you will all remember forever. It will change the face of American banking and force all the business off to London. It will take years to get rid of this legislation." Well, it took them until 1974 to get rid of the legislation, but they got rid of Kennedy within 2 months. And in the years to follow, George Soros was plugged into the highest levels of the British financier oligarchy and built up billions of dollars as a favored person and an activist on behalf of the their multinational looting operations in Africa and elsewhere. So now he has these open society institutes alongside of his own personal investments. In South Africa, Johannesburg is his initiative for Southern Africa, for example. And from there, he employs people from South Africa and Zimbabwe to try to overthrow the government of Zimbabwe. And this is an old British initiative. We've recently written about how this was laundered through Soros and through the American NED, National Endowment for Democracy, and so forth. But Soros is in there running this scam to try to overthrow Mugabe, all in the name of human rights. So they want to get back the land for the white settlers or for the speculators, and they want to stop these countries, especially South Africa, from being an independent nation. The African leaders have been saying to us, to in the EIR and to LaRouche, why doesn't George Soros provide transparency? He was one of the he has taken over the whole Transparency International apparatus. He and the British Foreign Office, mercenary operations like the Crown Agents, they run this thing called Transparency International. And he is a top leader of that. And in the name of an open society or anti-corruption efforts, he's trying to overthrow government after government in the third world, where the resources are that they want to grab. So these African leaders are asking us, well, wait a minute. Why doesn't Soros be transparent? All of his personal holdings, his billions, are in secret funds sequestered in the Netherlands Antilles and in other offshore locations. All of it is secret. He does that in order to escape U.S. laws and not have to, tell what he's doing and what he's holding under our whatever regulations are left after he and his allies destroyed our all regulatory system. So we're coming down now to a real showdown with this vulture, because he is posing an immediate threat to the survival of the African nations and trying to strangle the Democratic Party and make sure it loses by putting his hooks into that on behalf of the British Empire. So we're fighting him in the United States and in Africa and in Asia and around the globe. LaRouche has declared war on him, and he's hurting from this, but we got to bring him down.
Well, let me ask you all one thing to clear up. It's not like this man's an evil genius and has made his own money. I mean, you've demonstrated in print and right on this show about he's a wretch. I mean, he was brought up to be, unfortunately, at the young age, a moral wretch, so he's willing to be this immoral economic hitman. But when you said the secrecy, too, he's plugged into money outlets so because they know what job he'll do of the British imperial types is where it's coming from. It's not like he knows how to really bet at the casino, right?
Yeah, I mean, one of the big mistakes that people make, Like, for example, when he was crashing the currencies of Malaysia, when he sank the Italian lira.
That was one time.
Malaysia 92. Was 98 and then 92 with the lira.
Right.
And, you know, they give him too much credit, saying this is the man who crashed the Bank of England.
Right.
Do you think that if he actually crashed the Bank of England and, you know, that he would still be alive?
Go back in 2002 when Tony Blair and George Bush were, at Blair's insistence, cooking up this war against Iraq, which George Soros supposedly is against. George Soros went to Tony Blair and gave him a proposal for a totally new initiative to destroy the sovereignty of African and other countries. It was called the Extractive Industries Transparency Initiative. And Tony Blair took Soros's whole format and announced in 2002 and then set up in 2003 this organization run from the British, from London. And then George Soros was given free rein by Prince Charles and by Blair to actually move this organization, which was run directly by the leading mining companies and oil companies of the world, Shell Oil, Anglo-American, De Beers, all of them. Soros moved that organization to Norway, where he is in charge of it. He personally runs virtually every aspect of it. And in 2006, Paul Wolfowitz, who was the architect of the propaganda for the war in Iraq, was now head of the World Bank. He went up to Norway and had a press conference with Soros. And they said, the World Bank is coming into this. You have our former bank executive, Peter Eigen, as the head of this EITI. We're going to go in and make sure that all the African countries will turn over all their books to us and to these corporations so we can make sure they're open and above corruption. So this is what George Soros represents. People who are on his payroll or who get money indirectly or directly try to excuse themselves by talking about progressive this or that.
Well, don't forget, Tony, that
the great the
people like Nancy Pelosi, people like Howard Dean.
Yeah, the progressives overlooked one thing in 2006 when Soros was using Move On to go after Halliburton.
Oh, yes.
Wow. Remember that?
Wow.
Tell it. And this particular operation actually drove Halliburton's stocks down. And Soros, in the middle of this, buys up about 2 million shares of Halliburton while the stock is low. And then after that occurred, he got Move On to stop attacking Halliburton. And now the stock is going back up. You think he's not making a killing right now off of Halliburton?
Yeah, he made, $50 million off of that, like that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It went up. It went from $26 a share to, I think, now it's about $50. So much for progress.
Well,
maybe that shows our economy is improving if the Halliburton shares went up.
Right. In his line of thinking. Well, let me ask, you've talked about Africa. You mentioned Malaysia, these dirty speculative operations on currencies and everything else. I understand from one of your writings that Soros himself has announced on the United States he wants to bring more democracy here and has committed something, announced we're going to have $800 million in the next 10 years. What's going?
Yeah, I mean, I can't say definitely what that is, but basically what his other operations did, you can look at the International Science Fund, again, over in Russia, where, I mean, Russia has historically incredible institutions for science, and just culturally have a certain commitment, like the United States, when we're acting sane, to technological progress and these sorts of things. So what Soros did is he set up this International Science Fund in Russia to start the brain drain, where he'd give these scientists, you know, just enough money, and the economy's collapsed. They had, I forget, something like 2,000% inflation in the ruble. And Soros says, "Well, here, I'll give you a few bucks to do some research." But U.S. intelligence services actually looked into the operation. He wasn't giving them enough to do breakthrough research, and their conclusion was he was just picking their brains. But in the United States, yeah, it's a little different. Because what he wants, I mean, as a British operative, he's acting on this notion of, you know, British brains and U.S. brawn. The United States is going to enforce a new world empire, and so he's having these students grants to study what to do after an authoritarian regime is overthrown. You know, reshaping the education of, you know, this is my generation. What do you do to be part of a one world government under British influence? And so, I mean, that's just one aspect.
So he's giving giving grants in the United States to, or was this some of the Russians you were talking about?
Yeah, well, yeah, it's the Open Society in the United States. That's the 800 million.
So that plugs into too. You can have people, or they probably are studying at Felix Rohatyn's department up at Middlebury College, on how to have fascist corporatism or anything else. It seems to be a network of this. The one thing over the years, too, Tony or Ed or Leandra, you might, I mean, among the obvious things he funded, did he not, were these legalized dope state-level referenda? Is that the kind of thing they would do in the U.S.? You have to have an open society, and there were votes on state level to legalize dope. Is that right?
Yeah, that's true.
He's the primary, along with couple of his billionaire friends, but he's the spearhead of the efforts in the United States and in Latin America to legalize narcotics. He poured money into the coca leaf producers down in South America, and this goes with the British longtime commitment to destroy societies. Both by addicting people to mind-destroying drugs, as they did throughout the 19th century and so forth in China and elsewhere, but also to make sure that they don't have modern agriculture, that they don't have an agro-industrial power that would give them the real political independence and put the citizens on a cultural level to be free of colonial interference. So you see this Soros intervention on behalf of these impoverished farmers to push them and to fund them in the direction of slavery instead of against the nationalist impulse to build up infrastructure and modern times. And this goes back to the same idea as this transparency thing. If you go back to the days when they set this up in the 1990s, Transparency International, they used the word corruption, the corruption of the government of some African or South American country. And whenever they used that word, what they meant was if the government or the nation uses the resources, the natural resources, and the credit of the country to build dams, nuclear plants, steel mills, infrastructure, education. That's corruption. They have to throw the nation open and you have its resources available to be looted. That's not corruption. And the best way to make sure that the society is completely deranged and opened up for looting is to have it be a dope society. So that's his role in the United States as well as in these other countries.
Well, let me ask one question here bearing on what you're saying, a role in the United States. And also while we do that, just alert our sound engineer here in case before we do have 20 minutes left on the show. And there, George Soros was directly confronted with what he's doing on the radio this week by a LaRouche Youth Movement member in Germany, Andreas. Mm-hmm. And I think that can be played before the show is over if George, our sound guy, hears me. he can set it up and let us know. But meantime, back to the United States. Ed, you had mentioned at the beginning about the funding through of things like Acorn and other things. And I think we've seen in recent months, for example, there'll be street rallies against the foreclosures of people's homes, and that's, well, there ought to be, like in New York City or somewhere. Mm-hmm. But then it only goes so far. And so Acorn was involved in having a lot of these protest rallies around the country, but then it doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't, you know, they don't get involved in what the LaRouche Pact calls a firewall, either the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act, or some kind of firewall, yeah, well, some kind of approximation. And I guess that's, there's a money trail there, I presume. Yeah.
Also, yeah. You look at the OSI Baltimore initiative, mm-hmm. where they're
what
saying...
What is that, you know, one?
Well, they say there's the big foreclosure crisis. Mm-hmm. What we have to do is, they're essentially saying bail out the mortgage lenders.
That's their solution.
And they say that will help.
Oh, that is what they're saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's kind of tough to mobilize people around that.
Yeah, I mean, and this is also how you create disorganization amongst the lower 80% intentionally. This is how you demoralize the lower 80%, which is his chief role in the Democratic Party. His financing is to that extent. You organize people around initiatives that won't work, and you demoralize them, and nothing actually gets done. I mean, look, take. The other angle of the United States operation, he's been using organizations like Acorn and so forth in strange ways to pressure some of the superdelegates around the convention. Remember that John Edwards, for example, had said for a while during the campaign season when it was the primary season when it was ongoing that he was not going to endorse a candidate until the convention. That is, he was going to wait and see how things played out. Now, all of a sudden, Edwards launches a anti-poverty campaign called Half in Ten. Right? And who are the prospective donors to fund this program? Acorn and the Center for American Progress, which is controlled by Soros. So, right after he launched this campaign, he came out and endorsed Obama. Right, so you have in one situation, Soros is practically demoralizing the most significant portion of the population through organizing these guys around these programs that won't work, and then using those same forces to manipulate an election process. So this is dirty business, in other words. Very dirty business.
Well, let me ask you, because I caught, Leandra, you wrote one thing in the pamphlet. You ended one article, and you said, is the money really worth it? And now it's this. It's been circulating, 200,000 copies, hard copy. You know, it's really getting around.
Also through the internet.
And through the internet, big time, when it was released, the day it was released. And by the way, I want to tell people again, I think the LaRouche Pack is planning to reprint more hard copy.
Yeah, we're reprinting
resources count a lot, so people can go to LaRouchePack.com. What's your plan?
Oh, we're also going to be releasing a short video, a 20 to 30 minute video on the LaRouchePack.com website. And so people should go there. And that'll be soon.
Great. And by the way, I'll just say, I have a question for Ed on this, but I'll just say, it turns out we can't play that clip that I just mentioned, but before the show's over, Tony Chasen's going to tell you how to listen to it and what he said. Yeah. But Ed, you're in the war room, and so some people are responding around the country when, you know, wondering who's behind a lot of the crap or the...
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Everybody's responding. People who we've been organizing, and also people who've just been sentient looking at this whole election process, we're coming across a number of young people and also older people that were confused by the entire primary process. It just didn't make sense to a lot of people. With the votes not being counted in Michigan and Florida, that was strange. Just the mere fact that Obama is the nominee confuses a lot of people, given the way things were run. So when we put out the Soros pamphlet, it made clear what some of the strategic issues were, why it is that all of the strange things that you saw during the campaign season were occurring. And it's not some vague idea. It's a person who's being employed on behalf of very special British interests that is doing this stuff. Al Gore is doing it, too. We'll get to him in about a week or two. But we wanted to focus on Soros. So now you have a situation where you have organic movements actually growing out of the population that are moving with our material. That they themselves are going after Soros. They themselves are getting to the bottom of how this stuff has been manipulated inside the Democratic Party, inside their communities. Yeah. We had a town hall meeting, for example. Our youth movement in Seattle had a town hall meeting. And representatives from one of these organic groups, I think the Puma group, they attended there and they spoke. And that organization and organizations like that have been now coming into the political arena in the forefront, deploying with our material on Soros and attacking this thing. Because in their view, they're being hit by the economic conditions that they're living in. We can't really afford for this type of stuff to continue inside the Democratic Party. So, and there's a town hall meeting we're having today in Boston. We're getting a similar response. And all over the country, this is the response. People want to know why this is happening to them. And our role has always been to get to the bottom of things, give people a sense of what the cause is of these kinds of things, get those things out of the way, and then now let's move with the LaRouche policy initiative.
Yeah, I wanted to just point to the year 2004. If you listen to those people from the right wing who provide the necessary cover for George Soros to get away with things by saying, oh, he's a communist or he's a progressive.
I mean, they play him up.
Yeah, they play him up. They give him some prestige by calling him all kinds of names. And they say that he funded the efforts to overthrow George Bush in 2004. Well, let's look at that. He and his stooge inside labor, Andy Stern of the Service Employees International Union, were very explicit in 2004 that they would fund and cause billionaires under George Soros' thumb to fund an apparatus alternative to the Democratic Party, that this would break the ties of the Democratic Party to the Franklin Roosevelt legacy and to the labor unions. Mm-hmm. And this, I mean, Stern himself is the leader of a large labor union. Right after this was put together by Soros, Stern led his own union and others out of the AFL-CIO. So this is a direct attack on the life of the Democratic Party. Recently, Obama announced that the party is not going to be taking contributions from the AFL-CIO. And Soros himself had been a major funder of the McCain operations that led into the McCain-Feingold bill that stopped so-called big money, but set up a situation where these 527s, these unaccountable committees, could set up an alternative to the Democratic Party. And Soros and Stern put the most money into those for the 2004 election campaign. And they moved into position all over the apparatus of the Democratic Party. And then finally, after Soros had started bankrolled the campaign of Howard Dean for president, and he lost. And then when the Democrats lost the election in 2004, this apparatus got Howard Dean to be the chairman of the Democratic Party and wreck the party, completely destroy it, make sure that the resources were scattered, that you have a freak show instead of an identification with the working man, and never, never recover the identification with Franklin Roosevelt. That's the objective.
Yeah, the only thing that salvaged that election was the organizing, the mass organizing that that the LaRouche Youth Movement that we were doing on the streets. I mean, we were getting out millions of pamphlets, deploying people with bundles of our literature.
In
2004.
You're talking about 2006.
Yeah, 2006.
Now. Yeah, right.
Oh, no.
2006, yeah. In congressional elections.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's the 2006 attempt to, you know, write Roosevelt out of the party by Dean, who was, you know, born to lose. that was a victory for the lower 80%, who were essentially they were coming to LaRouche Pack to get very, very specific marching orders on, you know, what's LaRouche saying, what do we have to do, the economy's, it was already obvious in 2006 that the economy was gone, especially to younger people who are looking for the most part into the future, what can we expect. And so, I mean, the young people were ready to take the United States back in a productive direction. But Soros's operative, you know, Dean, was trying to counter that. And it's interesting because the way these guys work, people tend to give them way too much credit that what they're doing is reacting. There's a positive motion in the country, and they simply can't tolerate that. So they react. And it's not as individuals. What Soros is, if anybody's ever seen a slime mold, they tend to spore and produce more of themselves. And Soros is this sporing growth in a slime mold of dirty financial operations, obscene cultural warfare. And so, you know, what we've said is, you know, we want to save humanity. It's our job to clean up the slime mold, especially when it's about to spore. And, I mean, so LaRouche has laid out very, very clearly the three steps to not just eliminate Soros, although we relish...
We'll take it.
Yeah, we'll take it. But to end this everything that we've gone through today, and bring back the actual tradition of the United States. And he's put out the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act, which basically says, you know, we're going to freeze the system, put it into bankruptcy. But had we passed the HBPA, we wouldn't be in the situation that we're in right now with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Had we passed LaRouche's HBPA, we wouldn't be experiencing the hyperinflation where students are saying, well, I can either drive to school today or I can eat. And then the second step in LaRouche's proposal, you set up a two-tier credit system and you stop giving preference to the speculators. And it's, you knock them out of the game. You're not going to allow them to loot your country anymore. And then LaRouche's third step, which is the four powers, which is what upsets these guys to no end, that we can have a community of sovereign nation states.
Well, one thing is that on the historical predecessor of the kind of no-goodniks you're describing that have stopped what just the policies you describe, Ed, you've got this 1932 new fantastic video. I mean, 1932. The new video that's come out that the LPAC and LIM have produced, where the Raskob and other people like Soros were trying to control everything at the convention. That's something that people should. You can point to say something about.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's. The conception of the thing is really situated within the period of 1890 through, that was the beginning of World War I when Bismarck was ousted, to 1932. The video actually goes through a phase of history where geopolitics had changed, where the British all of a sudden found themselves in the situation that where America was the predominant economic power on the planet, and other countries, even former British colonies, were joining America. And so the British needed to launch a world war to jam this thing up and to bring back a one-world British empire. So what they did, essentially, was they created a whole bunch of crises, which led to a partner in the United States. That is, they couldn't defeat the United States militarily because they were largely still a maritime-based empire. And we had developed the Transcontinental Railroad and other industries. So they couldn't defeat us. So they once Bismarck was ousted, and they assassinated McKinley, Sadiq Carnot, Teddy Roosevelt came in, and you had a partner in the United States that was complicit in large part in these world wars, World War One.
So, well, only because of the time, I'm just saying, because we're down to the wire, that we can play Soros being confronted on radio.
People should watch the video. It's online. 1932 is the name of it. It's fantastic. But go ahead.
Yes, and also, so it's like being able to confront those rotten, the types that were trying to keep Franklin Delano Roosevelt out of office anyway to get it. So go ahead, George. Why don't you play that now?
This was on NPR July 9th live, and Soros responded. He was thunderstruck by this, by what we're doing with him.
Okay. You should only lend 90%.
So a little more foot on the brake
kind
there.
Of regulation.
Our time grows short. I know there's more we could say there, but so many listeners. Let's get a call from Berlin, Germany. Andreas, you're on the air with George Soros.
Yes, hello. Living in Berlin, I ran into a political movement here that's talking about you a lot, and I'm kind of a little bit confused of what you said now, because it sounds like it's not a question of whether or not you would have regulation, because also free markets have a regulated structure with central banks and so forth.
Mm.
The reason I'm a bit confused is because I know you do a lot of charity work and you also make money, of course, on the financial markets and so forth. But what I don't understand is that these people who are with LaRouche, they talk about that you used to be working for Hitler and that you said in CBS interviews that you were quite proud of that work and that you had no remorse whatsoever about it and so forth.
Andreas, you're driving right off the map that I know, but George Soros, what's this?
Well, there is a campaign by somebody called LaRouche, who's a nut. And, he makes all kinds of false accusations, but it's widely distributed and obviously has reached this gentleman. And all I can tell you that those accusations are absolutely groundless, false rumors.
Let me ask you about politics. You poured 20 plus.
Okay, thanks. That was on NPR. That was George Soros confronted by the LaRouche Youth Movement leader in Berlin. And this brings us to the end of our time. So I want to just leave everyone. Remember July 22nd at 1 p.m. Eastern Time in the United States. Hear the LaRouche International webcast on www.larouchepac.com. And also go there and watch this video that Ed Hamler was just describing. See that. It's about 90 minutes. You must see it. And I thank Ed Hamler, Leander Bernstein, and Tony Chaikin. And this is the end of the LaRouche Show for July 12th. Listen July 19th with Harley Schlanger. This is Marcia Mary Baker. Thank you very much.